And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
DirecTV gives you access to apps like Netflix and live sports right next to each other.
I don't get it.
Let me put it in pigeon terms. It's like that one amazing dumpster with the old fruits and cardboard all in one place.
How am I supposed to keep up with illustrative metaphors when you are making me so hungry?
Get live TV and streaming apps together without a satellite. Visit DirecTV.com. Requires high-speed internet-connected Gemini device and separate paid subscription to watch Netflix on DirecTV. Terms and restrictions apply.
The Athletic.
Hi there, this is The Athletic Football Podcast Weekend Preview, and Match Day 7 in the Premier League is our focus. I'm Adam Leventhal in central London at the Athletics HQ. We are back for another Friday and we have a wonderful cast alongside me this week. It is Tim Spears. First of all, how are you, Tim?
Very well, thanks. How are you?
Yeah, I'm very well. I'm very well. Good to have you in the room. Kiva O'Neill, how are you?
Yeah, I'm good.
Yeah? You sure?
Bit of a cold coming on, but I feel like it's cold season now, so just got to take the hit.
You got your roll neck on. You're protected. Yeah. You're fine. Nick Miller's here as well. How are you?
Yeah, all right. Like Kiva, I think I might have a... You can just feel it.
Oh, well, this is great, isn't it? Yeah.
It's a small room with...
Yeah,
fantastic. With
and colds generally get passed on in the kind of early stages before you know you got it, so... You know.
Even better.
Brilliant. Great news.
So this time next week, me and Adam will be...
Yeah, we'll be under the weather. Yeah. Or, you know what we need in the studio?
Masks?
Maybe masks or a bowl of lemons.
Sure.
A bowl of lemons.
I heard someone talking about lemons the other day. I was completely baffled, and then obviously spotted the story and was like, okay, that's why someone was talking about lemons.
For people who aren't familiar with the story, Maurizio Pochettino, bless him, thinks that if you have a bowl of lemons in your room or anywhere, that will suck the bad energy out of the room. So hopefully, maybe towards the end of the show, we can get some lemons in here. Not to necessarily suck the bad energy, because we're all, you know, wonderful people. We all get on well. There's no bad energy in here, is there?
Don't think so. Other than towards Maurizio Pochettino, maybe. Is there a more damning thing you can say about a sort of top-level football manager than bless him?
Oh, yeah, no, I didn't mean that. I didn't mean it in a bad way. I actually think he's a lovely guy. I think he's a lovely guy. He's been very good in my interactions with him. I'm sure same for you, Tim, when you've been in touch with him and spoken
been
to him.
Touch. Yeah, we haven't caught up in a while. I mean, I don't think I've ever been in the same room as him, let alone spoke to him. But
okay, fine. But anyway, I didn't mean anything by it. And maybe we'll just get some lemons in the room. Shall we move on? Right, so we are six games into this Premier League season. And this is just a little wrap-up of where we are. Manchester City, they're top 100%. Surprise, surprise, 18 points. Liverpool, though, second. 5 wins out of 6, 2 points back. Brighton are third with 15 points. And then Tottenham and Arsenal, who drew 2-2 in the North London Derby last Sunday, they're on 14 points. They make up the top five. 2-2. Do you know who said it was going to be 2-2? Anyone?
Was it... Tim Spears?
Yeah, pointing at himself.
Oh, hang on.
At himself there.
Charlie Eccleshare said that it was going to be 2-2 as well, but I think it must have been after you recorded this podcast last week. So
yeah.
He tweeted it, didn't he?
So, I mean, some people just like to, you know, just tweet it and say, yeah, I haven't mentioned it.
You just roll with it. You're just the footballing oracle, aren't you?
Yeah.
No, good. That was a good guess. I wanted to mark it because it's nice sometimes when you say something and it actually happens. I thought that was...
It's very rare, so it's worth pointing out.
Yeah, exactly. That's more the point, yeah. In the bottom three, again, we said like with Manchester City being top, unfortunately, it is the three promoted teams. Sheffield United are bottom, Burnley second bottom, and Luton third from bottom, all still with 1 point. Bournemouth, 17th, they're the only other team in the Premier League without a win. Now, this weekend, it is a 0-8-1-1 setup. It's a big bulky Saturday, everyone. All of the top 10 and all of the bottom 6 are in action. Shall I run you through them?
Do it.
Brilliant. I will. Let's go. It is Villa against Brighton at 12:30. Then you've got 6 3 p.m. kickoffs. Bournemouth against Arsenal. Everton against Luton. Manchester United against Crystal Palace. Newcastle Burnley. West Ham Sheffield United and Wolves. against Manchester City. Then at 5:30, and this is the one that we're going to really focus on in this podcast, it is Tottenham against Liverpool. And then to complete the weekend, you've got Forest against Brentford, 2 o'clock Sunday, and then the Monday night football, Fulham and Chelsea and all their lemons are there at Craven Cottage. One other thing on culinary things, something caught my eye from you, Tim, and I just wanted to mention it because it reminded me that I thought maybe comfort food is part of your life. A fish finger waffle sandwich with mushy peas.
Oh.
You posted this on Instagram and I saw it and I screen grabbed it instantly. You'd just drawn 1-1 at Luton. Was this very much comfort food, or is this usually how you roll? Because it looks like quite something.
It was Friday night actually, but didn't post it till Saturday. So it wasn't like, oh, okay. Wolves didn't beat Luton, it's horrendous, I need to eat some fish fingers and waffles.
Okay, but
that was actually a request of me. My friends saw that advertised on Instagram or something. They were like, they don't have an oven at the moment, so they were like, oh, can we come to yours and have fish finger sandwiches, but with waffles as the bread, right? And then like a layer of mushy peas in the
it sounds in the gross.
No. It's sort of like posh.
Oh, sorry. There's a picture of it.
Posh fish and...
Yeah, like it looks gross as well.
I was on board until the... Oh, there's some cheese in there as well.
Yeah, cheese. Is that a bit rogue, cheese, fish fingers?
I think the peas are more rogue, I think. No. I was on board until the peas.
Yeah. This has drawn...
Did you see it on TikTok?
I've had adverts from Birdseye all week actually since making it, which is interesting.
What, they've been serving you adverts after you posted that?
Yeah, after I posted that. I guess I've been talking about it a lot, and I'm probably going to get even more now.
Are you an influencer now? Are you a waffle influencer?
I've got to say the reaction has been extreme to me posting that, between people who think, awful, and people who think
it's when I said about having hot cereal and people freaked out about that.
Hot cereal?
Yeah, so hot cornflakes.
Yeah, I remember that.
The internet lost its mind.
You know what, everyone? I think we might be digressing. I'm getting looks from the producer, okay? So let's move on from that more mouth-watering discussion to the most mouth-watering fixture of the weekend. And it is Tottenham against Liverpool. Tottenham Hotspur Stadium, 5:30 on Saturday. And two teams, two redesigns head-to-head. We have Tottenham in fourth, all about Ange Ball, against Liverpool in second. Liverpool 2.0, as they are now known, according to Jurgen Klopp. And I just wanted to give our two dedicated reporters an opportunity for a little bit of an elevator pitch. Let's start with Tottenham. About the redesign, what would you say are the main elements of this Tottenham redesign under Ange?
I mean, redesign suggests, taking what was last season and changing it. And they couldn't be any more different from last season. I remember coming on podcasts like this and others and covering Spurs, and it felt like a chore to talk about Spurs because people were so bored of talking about them. I was bored of writing about them in a way, because it was the same nonsense every single week. Whereas I think this is part of the success so far, because the players are so keen to buy into what Ange has brought in, because they were so sick of what Conte was doing last season in terms of it being so regimented, the endless meetings, being told what to do. The negativity, the negative tactics, safety first, clean sheets. They actually admitted, Christian Stellini actually admitted, that they weren't trying to score in first halves a lot of the time last season, which is insane when you think about it. They were trying to conserve energy so that they would be fresher later in the game to score, which, okay, maybe you can sort of see the logic in that, but it sounds bonkers now. As part of that, so many players have been reinvigorated, particularly Yves Bissouma, but also Son, Romero, who's gone from 11 bookings to, I think, 2 fouls this season, and Kulusevski. So, yeah, the whole play, the feel more than anything, that stadium is completely transformed. It feels amazing to be there and be part of it. You can sense it. It reminds me a little bit of Arsenal last season. And if they win this weekend, then people will start talking about them in those terms, in terms of what Arsenal did last year, because it has that same feel.
We'll discuss a few of those points that you've raised there, but let's kick on to Liverpool 2.0. For people who don't know what I'm talking about when I'm saying Liverpool 2.0, this is something that Klopp has said, and what does it mean?
I guess for me, it feels like it sort of began at the end of last season, because Liverpool are obviously unbeaten now in, I think, 17 Premier League games. Mm. So obviously the formation change and moving Trent Alexander-Arnold into the hybrid role, that was sort of the beginning of it. And then actually, you know, how many midfielders left the club? I think it was 5 in total, and 4 joined. It did feel like, you know, we were building up to this rebuild and transition. And it's almost like Liverpool should still be in a transition, but then Dominic Szoboszlai just had other ideas and thought, nah, I'm going to hit the ground absolutely running. Alexis McAllister as well, when he's played, I think the midfield is transformed. And then you've got someone like Curtis Jones, who's just gone over 100 appearances for Liverpool, kind of maybe out of nowhere to some people. But if you've watched Liverpool, obviously, a lot, you know that he's been getting there, and he was very much part of how, you know, Liverpool turned things around towards the end of last season. And it just, yeah, it feels like the positivity is sort of radiating out of the midfield to everywhere else.
The midfield thing I find extraordinary, that they've just a completely new midfield. I know that Jones has played some games and Elliot's played some games, but is there anything in particular that they've done to be able to get these players who are kind of strangers and have only just joined to gel so quickly? I mean, is it just as simple as McAllister and Szoboszlai are just really good players and they've fitted in really nicely?
It feels that way when you watch Szoboszlai in particular. Like McAllister, no one was worried because you watched him for Brighton, you knew exactly what you're going to get, and that's exactly what he's given. Szoboszlai was more of like, it felt a little bit like left field. Like, I hadn't heard of him before. If you'd heard of him, okay, you had. But, you know, I think a lot of fans were sort of new to who he was, and he's just, yeah, like I mentioned, hit the ground running, but also just is like a throwback to like what Jurgen Klopp wanted to build at Liverpool, in that like players that just don't stop running. And that used to take time. I remember like Oxlade-Chamberlain, Fabinho, like not like getting in the team straight away because Klopp needed to like almost train them up, where Szoboszlai is like a ready-made version of a Klopp player, and he's 22, and yeah, he's played 8 games, and Liverpool fans are losing their minds at how good he is, because he scored a cracking goal against Leicester, there's one against Aston Villa. The technique is like unbelievable, like up there with the very best. And yeah, he's drawn comparisons to Steven Gerrard, and he's not played 10 games yet, which is, I think, yeah, he feels like the sort of transformative player. But then you've got Mo Salah just carrying on doing what Mo Salah does, and Nunes is now looking like the player Liverpool, I think, initially thought they were signing. They really like ironed out his edges, and he just seems to be, you know, in this state of confidence and like understands the players around him more, and just his movement. He just seems like he's really at home now. And then you've got Luis Diaz, obviously, who was out for such a long time, and then Gakpo, Jota. There's like options as well, which is, I think, is the really encouraging thing.
A word on James Maddison at Spurs, because in the same way that there's been players that have sort of kick-started Liverpool's season in that change, James Maddison has done likewise for Tottenham. His contribution has been significant. 2 goals, 4 assists, big on the field, but also vocal off it as well, which is helpful to the whole premise, basically saying Spurs aren't Spursy anymore. I wonder, firstly, on what he has been saying, do you think that might come back to bite him? Or do you genuinely believe that his introduction into that side and this new setup is less Spursy, will have a, you know, a more solid spine?
I don't think it'll come back to bite him, and I don't think he'll care either way.
Yeah.
But he's,
which is so refreshing.
Yeah, yeah. His impact's unbelievable. I was on the Spurs pod yesterday asking the guys who've been following Spurs for years, can they think of an impact that one player has made, and not just an impact like scoring 5 goals in your first 5 games for the club or anything like that, but also the way that they've got the club straight away, and the fans have taken to him straight away, and his teammates and his manager, and he just feels like a Mr. Spurs already. It's remarkable how much it's like he's been preparing for it for a couple of years, and like he's wanted to join Spurs, and now he's just gone with it.
I feel like the first game when I watched the highlights and I was like, oh, Maddison plays for Spurs. Like, that happens the first weekend of the season. You're like, oh, they play for them now. But then the second game, third game, it's like, oh, yeah, he's a Spurs player. And I can't really remember him playing for Leicester almost.
Mm. Yeah, yeah, totally. He embodies everything. I'm not even going to use the phrase, but what they say about Postecoglou's style of football.
What? Ange ball?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I don't like that. But
don't like it?
Well,
have you run out of steam with it? Are you just you were all on board, but you were balling all over the shop?
No, just ball, full stop.
Oh, ball, right, something ball.
Just
okay, fine.
Lazy, do you know what I mean?
All right, fine.
Sorry, digress. Yeah.
So okay, no, that's interesting though. Mm. So what do you want to call it? When someone says Angeball, what would you say otherwise to describe it?
I'll just say Postecoglou style of football.
It's too many words, isn't it?
More, it's more letters though, isn't it?
Angeball's fun. You know what you you know what it means straight away.
No, that's fine, but it's just
if you want to have your fun, that's fine.
Yeah. Have you ever said it?
No, not with that. I might have said it before.
What have you not said?
I might have said Nuno Ball, maybe.
Oh, right,
if
okay.
They use that.
But you've not said what?
Don't remember.
Oh, right. I was just trying to get you to say
Angeball. Yeah, next. Yeah. We just tell by your face.
Yeah, go on. So go on, you were talking about...
I was talking about Postecoglou style of football and how Maddison fits in really well within it.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I think some people... He winds some people up. Not just with his sort of on-field antics, but I think he's got this reputation as a party boy, part of that justified. But when you speak to people who he's played with in his career, you'll see that he's, in the past couple of years in particular, he's really, really matured. And you have to do that to be a top player. You don't get where he is now without that. I think others have overlooked that in the past. I know that Man City were rumoured to be sort of looking at him, and Pep was an admirer. And Southgate obviously sort of... kept him on a leash for a couple of years, I think, for those reasons as well. But since becoming a father and other things that have happened in his career, he's 26 now, and you can see that maturity is there, plus the cockiness, which is what part of what makes him a great player.
And it's great to see the sort of banter, let's say, between him and Bukayo Saka, and the use of his celebration and just the way that he sort of, I don't know, just seemed very comfortable. And you just thought, When they do go to England and they are together in the same dressing room, it will just be a nice atmosphere. He doesn't come across with any edge, does he? He comes across with honesty, humility, and humour, which is great to see. Similar to Nick Miller, really.
Very much so. Yeah.
A word about the game as a whole, because we'll dig into a few more elements of these two sides that have sort of almost repair shopped themselves after last season.
Lovely stuff.
No reaction to that on social media.
Does that suggest
at all.
They no reaction in the studio either? Does that suggest that Nick and Kiva didn't listen to last week's show?
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's fine. I'm very much so. I didn't listen to. I'm aware of the concept of Repair Shop, but I've never watched that either. So.
Yeah, that's fine. So, and you've never great seen show. It either. Have you seen it?
I love the Repair Shop.
Get in there. Get in. Just get in.
People take.
Get in there.
Like. We're little in. Things that are broken and mean something to them, and then these amazing people fix them.
Oh, right. Yeah, okay. So it's like a...
Like I cry off every episode.
Right.
Wow.
So it's like, you know, granddad's old watch or something.
Yeah,
like
a little, like, train set or something.
Right. That does sound very heartwarming.
It's like See? It's like Antiques Roadshow, but, like, everything's broken.
Right. And then it's all fixed.
So that's why I used the comparison, because it means a lot to so many people. I was going to ask Nick, because obviously we're focused with, you know, a Liverpool person and a Spurs person in the room. You're not. You're a Forest person. But when you look at that fixture, does it get your juices flowing? Because you've seen how they've sort of been refitted.
Yeah, very much so. I mean, there's a lot of pressure on it this weekend, because otherwise the fixtures are not, you know, the greatest otherwise. But this game is, you know, the two styles of football, which we're not going to, you know, refer to in any kind of pithy way. There are enough similarities but enough differences to suggest that they're going to... You know, it's going to be these two kind of forces smashing up against each other, which, you know, it could be completely chaotic. I mean, Kiva mentioned the slight concerns about Liverpool's defence, although I think only Man City have conceded fewer goals so far.
Yeah, but they've conceded one in five out of six games. So it's kind of just like, even though they're scoring, is it like 2.5 goals per game, they're conceding.
Yeah.
So it just feels like that little bit of jeopardy is still there, but then they've got this real...
But
like,
are they doing it,
it doesn't
for fun,
matter.
Do you think? Are they just
Maybe.
Sort of going, come on then, we'll give you a lead.
Tell you
what,
it wasn't
back.
Fun last season when they conceded early so much and then just like kept losing or drawing or having to like, they didn't have enough in the tank to fight back, but now they have. So I think that's the difference. It's like they're not worried about it.
But both teams are scoring a lot of goals. I think Spurs scored at least twice in every game. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and Liverpool have scored three in quite a few games as well. So... you would sort of expect something quite chaotic and exciting. So, yeah, very much juices flying.
Yeah, good. It's three goals in their last three games.
Right, there you go.
and they're looking to score 3 goals or more in 4 successive games for the first time since March 2014 under Brendan Rodgers, which was fun as well, wasn't it? That was fun.
That was a great time.
It was fun, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Can I offer a stat slash fact that I've stolen from someone else who works for The Athletic?
Yeah, go on then. Liverpool, was it me?
It wasn't you.
Okay,
no.
Good. Carry on.
It was Will Jeans, who works as one of the sub-editors on the desk. Liverpool and Tottenham obviously unbeaten. So are Manchester City and Arsenal, all unbeaten after 6 games. Only twice before in the history of the English top flight have 4 teams remained unbeaten after 7 games. One of those happened in 1990-91, and the other was 2011-12. So, yeah, assuming they all don't lose this weekend, then, not unprecedented. It's twice precedented, but not very often.
That's a great stat.
Another 2-2 draw, then.
Yeah. Also, I love a pre-Premier League all-time stat. It just gives it so much more gravitas. That does all-time.
That was a heavy stat. Well done. I like that.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
I'll ask you, Tim, in a moment about how long this sort of wonderful new Ange Ball era at Spurs will last. But I just wanted to get Kiva's take on the Klopp situation and how he has sort of done almost like a Fergie-esque reinvention of this side. He's got a contract until 2026. How long do you think these new green shoots will grow for? How long do you see this period lasting for?
Well, we're at the beginning of it, so I think that's what's exciting, because when you got into the rhythm of his first team, you know, that was then, you know, a few seasons of success and trophies, and he brought everything back to Liverpool, the, you know, the fans wanted. So that's the hope, that this is like the rebirth now of Jurgen Klopp's Liverpool. And I think that's been sort of a thing that's needed to happen, and maybe hasn't, in terms of different transfer windows and Liverpool not quite doing the business that they needed to. But this time it does feel like, other than a centre back, you know, they got the players that they wanted. They, you know, the midfield's completely new, and then the other midfielders are Harvey Elliott, Curtis Jones, Stefan Bajcetic. You know, these young players, Thiago as well, who, you know, we haven't seen yet this season because he's obviously been injured. And then it just, I don't know, it feels like there's enough freshness there. There was sort of a worry about like youth and experience, and whether, you know, there was enough sort of to bridge the gap between those two things. But as the season's gone on and the results have, you know, happened the way they have, and the performances have been as confident as they have, it does feel like, you know, we're at the start of that now. And I think that's what's exciting if it continues in this way.
Just going to say, Klopp's obviously been there a long time and he's won everything. You mentioned starting again there, the start of something new. Where does he get his motivation for starting again? Because this isn't just going to be, probably isn't going to be a one season thing. You know, where does his motivation come from?
Yeah, I guess it's wanting to... I think one of the things that Jurgen Klopp really wants to do, and this team and the players that are obviously still part of it that won the league in 2020 when obviously we were in lockdown, is win the Premier League again and have that moment with the fans, because they never got that. You know, we had the Champions League parade in 2019, and it was, you know, I think 1 million people or something on the streets. Like, winning the Premier League was so much bigger because it was such a long wait, 30 years. And you sort of felt like that pressure release, and, you know, then people couldn't like celebrate in the way they wanted. So it still feels like there's unfinished business in that way. And then I kind of think about Pep Guardiola's quotes. I think he said it quite a few times, that, you know, you can't do it with the same players, and you have to sort of, I don't think Liverpool have done that as well as they could have, where Guardiola's quite ruthless in, you know, a player will go and you just be like, whoa, I thought he was like, you know, one of the mainstays, but you've got to keep evolving. And I think Liverpool right now are at the point of the beginning of that evolution.
I wonder whether it's got something to do with how it all kind of ended at Dortmund as well, because he was there for 7 years, and then that last season, it really went off a cliff, and it sort of looked like that might have been happening again last season, but now maybe he just wants to kind of prove that he can do that. He can reinvent a team and reinvigorate a team, and it's not just like he has this kind of, you know, he has this inbuilt lifespan as a manager where people just kind of stop listening to him or whatever it was that happened at Dortmund in that last season. So I don't know, maybe that has something to do with it as well.
Yeah, there was certainly low points last season. Like there was I think when Liverpool got beat by Wolves and Klopp had like taken to Crosby Beach.
Good.
You know,
nice
like,
one, Kiva. I like that. That's good. That, you have to hammer him on Wolves as much as you can. So nicely dropped in. Well done.
Just letting him get, you know, remembering the good times there.
No, but the way you said it, like it was so humiliating to lose to Wolves. That's the way that
deeply
I took
embarrassing.
That.
Yeah, exactly.
Even Wolves.
No, but it was,
even,
like, it was in the midst of just losing to anyone and everyone, and it just felt like Liverpool were at this real low point, and yeah, Klopp went on this like
Wolves,
yeah, all right. I know the point you're trying to make.
Yeah, it's good.
You just keep labouring.
Klopp went
it's
on good. This like walk along Crosby Beach near where he lives, Formby Way, and it sort of was like maybe not a turning point straight away, but obviously it felt like quite a key moment. And just, you know, I think it's good to clear your mind and go to the beach to do that, definitely. And I think from there, Liverpool have like been building into this now. And I don't know quite where they're going to go. And I'm reluctant to say it's a title race yet, but it feels like it's heading that way if things continue.
Just a quick word on the fact that this week, going into the game, Tottenham haven't been playing, which obviously is disappointing to Spurs fans because they aren't in contention for the Carabao Cup. Liverpool did have a game, albeit there was loads of changes. Do you think that this will be a slight advantage for Spurs going into it, or no impact whatsoever, Tim?
It's hard to say for this week in particular, but I think that definitely helps Spurs this season. Although there's no hard and fast rule on this because Chelsea don't have Europe either, and they're heading for the relegation zone. So,
albeit they won in midweek. So they did win, and they actually thought, oh, we can win football matches again. So, who knows?
Yeah, although Carabao Cup with a reserve team. But yeah, that's the point you're making. But I think with Spurs particularly...
A win is a win, I think is the saying.
Yeah, particularly with Spurs, the way that they're training and they're still learning a new style, albeit they've taken to it very quickly. But more with Spurs, they haven't got a great bench. They haven't got a great squad. So that's one of the pitfalls ahead for them, for sure. That a couple of injuries, you can say this about any team, but a couple of injuries and they're really struggling. They've lost Perisic for the season, which is a real blow. They're already missing Sessegnon on the left flank, so they're massively relying on a 19-year-old Italian, he's 20 now, Destiny Adoghi, who's got to shoulder the burden for quite some time because there's no one else to play there except for Ben Davies, who's a very, very, very different footballer to Destiny Adoghi, and that completely changes the way that they'd have to play. So, yeah, there are pitfalls ahead with the squad, but I do think that'll be a huge advantage over the season. That they're out of the Carabao Cup as well, so potentially only playing sort of, if they don't go far in the FA Cup, 40 matches all season compared to others who'll play 60+. Definitely beneficial.
Final word on this game. Kiva, obviously, you're getting carried away. We are only six games into the season,
yeah,
but you think that this is you know,
I just said reluctant
Liverpool
to
are,
say
Liverpool are, you know, they're going to win everything. But do you see them now in a title battle with Manchester City, sort of old school?
Not yet. I feel like when they play Man City and how that goes and how they are going into that game will be, because every time Liverpool and Man City have sort of been in a title race, it's always felt like those games have defined it somehow. Even though actually Tottenham. Liverpool's draw with Tottenham in that 2021-22 season was probably, you know, you can pick a game and go, oh, that was the costly one, but that actually was, because obviously it was 1-1 draw at Anfield, and then Liverpool, you know, obviously didn't win the league that season. So it feels like all of the games are important, but where Liverpool are when they get to that game against Manchester City will, I think, sort of, you know, that's when you can probably start making a judgment on that, because, you know, it can quite easily sort of fall apart. But right now, it's looking good.
And Nick, from your point of view, on Spurs in the top four. I mean, they are fourth at the moment. Do you see it being a battle for the top four for them, or do you see them being able to sort of break through with the wonderful, you know, key word of Ange Ball really pushing them on to maybe even a title tilt, or is that far too much to expect?
I think that is far too much. As Tim mentioned, the squad is thin. Doggy gets injured, they're in trouble. I guess even with Benton Kerr still out, if Bissouma gets injured, then they might have some problems. Son gets injured, then, you know, there isn't really a reliable source of goals there as well. So yeah, I think title is too much. Probably Champions League might be a bit much by the time you get into sort of the winter and injuries start taking hold and stuff.
I actually completely disagree on top four or top five that I think it's realistically going to be this season. I think when you look at, I mean, they're already 9 points ahead of Chelsea, and Man United have got so many issues. And I think once Europe really kicks in earnest, you know, Brighton and Villa are going to struggle with the amount of games, and potentially Newcastle as well. I think it's open for Spurs to break into that top five. I really do. The momentum and the belief they've got. If you saw the game last week, you know, they were hammered for half an hour at Arsenal. Like, it was almost kind of suffocating how much Arsenal were pressing them and creating chance after chance. And they were drowning at one point. I really thought they're going to get hammered here. Not only did they just brave that storm and then come out with the odd counter-attack, like having defended with a backsword, they didn't do that. They played their way out of trouble with this really extremely brave one-touch football going through the middle of the park as well. Not like they're playing it long down the flanks for people to chase. They were playing their way through Arsenal. You can't underestimate, I think, that bravery that he's somehow managed to instill in them already in just a few weeks. And lack of Europe means injuries will be less of an issue, I think, as the season goes on. So, and we saw with Arsenal last season, we said time and again, oh, the squad's not big enough. And yeah, when it came to sort of March onwards, they had a couple of injuries that were costly. But overall, the squad issue wasn't too much of an issue for Arsenal last season. So yeah, I think they can take this and run with it.
Prediction time. Kiva?
2-2, already said. It's got to be.
Tim?
I think 2-2 is the obvious sort of score.
What's going on?
Nick?
Yeah, 2-2.
What? 2-2?
Come on.
All
well,
round.
It's, yeah, I mean, we're all hoping for kind of high scoring game. 2-2 draw. That's.
I mean, 3-3 would be more fun.
Yeah.
I think it's actually going to be 1-3.
Right.
Mm. I don't, but I just sort of said it to be different.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
DirecTV gives you access to apps like Netflix and live sports right next to each other.
I don't get it.
Let me put it in pigeon terms. It's like that one amazing dumpster with the old fruits and cardboard all in one place.
How am I supposed to keep up with illustrative metaphors when you are making me so hungry?
Get live TV and streaming apps together without a satellite. Visit DirecTV.com. Requires high-speed internet-connected Gemini device and separate paid subscription to watch Netflix on DirecTV. Terms and restrictions apply.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Shall we have a quick scan of some of the other games this weekend? Let's do that. Obviously, we're expecting Manchester City to make it 7 wins out of 7 at Wolves. That's almost a given. A quick word on Pedro Neto, though, scoring at Kenilworth Road. I saw a great clip, and it was very funny, whereby, because goals, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but sort of age-old problem or recent age-old problem of not being able to score goals. When he scored, he did 100 different celebrations in one. It was fantastic, wasn't it?
So good. He did like listen to the ears. Yeah. He did like the chest.
Yeah, kiss the badge. Hold the shirt,
into the crowd.
The whole lot. It was fantastic. And it went on for a while. He thought, you know, I'm just going to keep on doing it because who knows when another one was going to come. It'd
be pretty funny if VAR chalked that one up. After.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That was good. But I suppose it's worth marking that Manchester City have actually lost a game, and they lost it midweek against Newcastle, albeit in the run-up to the game, Pep Guardiola couldn't have been more dismissive of the Carabao Cup, even though he you know, likes to win it now and again. They lost against Newcastle. A word about the bottom, and it feels like it's a big week for Everton in the mire, but they could make it 3 wins out of 3. They won last week at Brentford, which is an impressive win, albeit Brentford didn't look particularly cohesive, which is surprising. They beat Villa in midweek in the Carabao Cup, and now they take on Luton, and they can put a bit more breathing space between them and the bottom.
Yeah, I mean, you watching last weekend against Brentford was kind of quite surprising in it, but it also reminded me a little bit, not quite so much in the way they played, but of the when they beat Brighton towards the end of the sort of back end of last season. And you wondered whether it was a sort of brief flash of competence that then sort of disappeared, or whether, you know, actually Sean Dyche is miraculously kind of trying to making some sense out of this mess. So I don't know whether beating Luton would necessarily be a sort of confirmation of that, but it would be an indication that the Brentford win wasn't just a blip, or, you know, a version of the Brighton win last season, after which they, you know, obviously only survived on the last day of the season.
Word about Aston Villa against Brighton, because that's a juicy fixture as well. I know we've had a big focus on Tottenham against Liverpool, but sixth, Villa against Brighton in third. We've spoken loads about Brighton, great recruitment, exceeding expectations, De Zerbi's a legend and all that sort of stuff. But just a quick word from anyone on Unai Emery, because the job that he's doing is still exceptional. I know we've got the issue with the Aston Villa shirts at the moment, and Castori, their kit supplier. I almost said another word for instead of kit. But Aston Villa in sixth against Brighton in third has the makings of a juicy fixture, doesn't it?
Yeah, as Tim mentioned before, with so many of the kind of established powers struggle or looking in various types of shambles, there is an opportunity certainly for at least one of those clubs to sneak in there. So yeah, I mean, I take it back. I was very dismissive about the other fixtures other than Spurs Liverpool, but you've reminded me that this will be a cracker as well.
A quick word about Manchester United, because I saw a lot of people saying, wow, that was the performance of the season against Crystal Palace in the Carabao Cup. They go head to head again at Old Trafford. Everyone's saying, well, they've turned a corner and all that, but they are ninth. They're only on 9 points. They're 5 points off the top four. It feels like they have to win this one to sort of stay in contention and keep just some sort of grip on the situation and get a league win. I mean, and obviously you've got Liverpool leanings, Kiva, but do you see Manchester United under Erik ten Hag being able to come to fruition?
I think they started slow last season. We were speaking about this a few weeks ago, wasn't we? And you kind of expect them to get going, but it's took a little bit longer than I thought. Maybe just winning a game is a nice feeling, and basically they've just got to do that against the same team, whether, you know, changes will be made and whatever. But that's quite a nice starting point, isn't it? Playing the same team in a matter of days to get themselves, you know, back up there. And it does only take, you know, I think once you turn it around last season, you know, we know how quick you can just, a win can change everything, and, you know, you slowly start climbing up the table. And I think that's, you know, sort of where you expect them to eventually be, even though it has been a bit of a mess.
Ten Hag's sort of like third, fourth favourite to be sacked at the moment. I by no means a Man United fan, but just pleading with them not to do that. Like, come on, it's not his fault. Look how rotten that club is. You know, three players can't even play for the team at the moment. That's how many issues they still have with ill discipline that stretch back so far. There's so many things wrong with that club. I just don't think he's one of them, to be honest. I just hope for his sake he gets a couple of results.
It's interesting, though. It's interesting you say that, because he's not necessarily sort of a breath of fresh air, sort of fun guy, Angie sort of guy. Maybe they just need a bit more sort of joy in there.
I mean, Fergie wasn't the most joyous of managers. No, I'm not sure.
They've never been a really joy.
No, but maybe that's what they need. Club. Maybe that's all that they need.
They were. Even under Ferguson, they were just a winning machine. They played a good football and they scored lots of goals, but they weren't a team that, as a neutral, you would always be super excited to watch, as like, you know, Liverpool under Rodgers or Tottenham under Pochettino in the kind of early years. From a neutral perspective, they didn't look particularly joyful from the outside.
But they were having fun. But in the intervening period, with what, Moyes, Ten Hag, Mourinho,
Solskjaer
was the babyface assassin, sort of a bit more fun and shining happy, and that didn't work. So maybe Ten Hag is the right guy and it'll all turn around, or maybe it'll continue to be a little bit of a shambles. We shall see.
I think it's just a shame you don't cover Man United for The Athletic. I'd love to read that piece.
Yeah.
Come on, guys.
Just chill out. Just have a bit more fun.
I guess it's weird that it's become normal. Like, my childhood, I never imagined that it would become normal for United at any point. And it's happened a few times over the past few seasons, you know, in the post-Fergie era, that they've become a team that can lose games and you just kind of go, oh, yeah, they lost. Like, that used to be like the biggest thing ever. If they lost the game, yeah, it was just like, you know, oh my God, Man United have lost the game. Nope. Where now it's become a normality. Sometimes they get into these sort of runs where it's like a normal thing. And that, like, if I could go back and tell myself when I was, you know, a kid, that would be a thing. You just could never imagine it.
I remember a season, I can't remember which season it was, but I think actually it must have been 94, 95, where they didn't even concede a goal at Old Trafford until February. So that wasn't like enormously, like, it was unusual, but it was like, well, yeah, it's United, of course they didn't. They were just this, you know, there is a whole generation of football fans now growing up not remembering when Manchester United were good, which is mind-blowing.
Life is all about cycles. Quick word, if you want to get more into Manchester United and maybe have a more detailed conversation rather than my sort of just chill out, check out the Talk of the Devils podcast with Laurie Whitwell, Carl Anker, Andy Mitten and Ian Irving each week. Right, we have talked far too much about loads of football and we've run out of time. Kiva, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Tim, thank you very much indeed.
Cheers, Adam.
Nick, well done.
Thanks, mate. Can I just plug a
piece?
Oh,
yes, of course you can. We forgot to mention something, didn't we? Go on, fire away.
So I was in Austria at the start of this week,
yes,
doing a piece for our Derby Day series. I was at Austria Salzburg against Red Bull Salzburg. A very quick bit of background. Red Bull Salzburg bought or took over the previous iteration of Austria Salzburg in 2005. The traditional Austria Salzburg fans weren't happy with this, so they formed their own club. It's a sort of souped-up version of AFC Wimbledon and MK Dons.
Yes.
The new Austria Salzburg have been kind of gradually working their way up the leagues. But this week was the first time since 2005 that they've ever played each other. So I was there, and the game itself was not a particularly thrilling contest because, you know, Austria Salzburg still playing the third tier, which in Austria is regional and it's, a lot of it's semi-professional. Red Bull Salzburg have won the last 10 Austrian titles, and they won this game 4-0, but the story and the occasion was great and the atmosphere was fantastic. And I've written a piece which should be out on The Athletic now.
Perfect. Pyro. All about pyro, wasn't it?
Big pyro. There was pyro at the... I went to the Austria Salzburg's final training session the day before the game, and probably about 300-400 fans showed up to that and set off smoke and pyro and were singing various songs that had swear words in there about Red Bull Salzburg, which was terrific fun.
Nice. Love a bit of pyro. Ayoak and Willeri will be back on Monday. I will be back next Friday with another weekend preview. Read more from the likes of Kiva, from Tim, from Nick on The Athletic. And you can sign up now for our best ever price of £1 or $1 a month for an entire year at theathletic.com/footballpod. Thank you very much for listening. Remember to drop in your comments and we will see you next week. Take care.